Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show on 1-2 Radio, and this is C.A. Brooks. And in this particular show, we do have changing hosts. I share this time slot with Mark Husson, and when I'm on the air, I usually talk about A Course in Miracles, one of my favorite things. So today is May 5th, 2017, the first week of May. It's Cinco de Mayo, which is always a very special day to me for my own reasons. So I'm happy to be here today and talking about A Course in Miracles. And I'm with my friend, author Susan Dugan. And we are going to be looking at and discussing ACIM Workbook Lesson 186, Salvation of the World Depends on Me. And I will be honest, the very first time I ever saw this workbook lesson, all I could think is, what? I mean, it's like,
even, where are we in trouble?
Well, I mean, you know, it was like, even after studying the course, I mean, by the time you get to lesson 186, I mean, you're like, what, a third of the way through the book? You know, you're a ways through. But I remember looking at that going, oh my God, what? So I thought it was pretty interesting. And I think this is one of those lessons that specifically, if you take it out of context, if you just hear those words, people's minds are going to go to all kinds of places that have nothing to do with this lesson or what they're telling us. So I thought it was good timing, and I'd love to hear why you wanted to do this lesson today. But Susan, before we get going too far, I just did want to invite everybody into our private group on Facebook if you'd like to join us that way. It is a private room that we have, so you can come on over there and post your questions. You can make comments, and to the extent that we can, we will address those today. And if you're new to the show, welcome. And if you want to come on over there, the best way to find that page is to go to 12radio.com. That's our website. And on the left side of the page, you're going to see that link that says chat. And when you click that, you're going to be redirected over to Facebook, and then you can join the group too. Scott Weaver is our producer today, and I'm sure he'll let you in, maybe for a small donation. Just joking. So come on over and join us on Facebook if you'd like to do that. But yeah, my guest today is Susan Dugan, and she has written several books on forgiveness, and she's an avid student and teacher of A Course in Miracles. And the one thing I wanted to ask Susan today too is this thought just popped into my mind is, you know, you've written those books, Extraordinary, Ordinary Forgiveness, and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. And this morning, as I was looking at those titles, I thought, I wonder what the next one's going to be. And I wonder if it's already in the works. So do you have another book in the works?
You know, I don't have another book in the works. I have the essays, you know, I have a manuscript, but I haven't done anything with it. So I'm debating about when and, you know, what to do with that. But eventually there probably will be another book in the forgiveness series. There's certainly enough material that I just have to go in and pull together and edit. So
You had been working on something fiction, right?
I have started writing fiction recently. I'm writing short stories again. And it's interesting to go back to after a long hiatus with that. Originally, I had done that, messed around with writing fiction for quite a few years, and started that, you know, probably sometime in my 30s. It was always an interest of mine. And so short stories have been a big thing of mine. I've tried to write a couple novels and had agents and things like that, and never really, they didn't unfortunately materialize. But so I've had a great, I mean, the only reason that that's important, relevant to A Course in Miracles discussion is that it was a real special love and hate relationship of mine.
Yes.
In the
yes.
sense that I really didn't have, I used it very much to punish myself with rejection. And really I did in the sense of identifying my, you know, getting very, my self-worth really getting caught up in that. And you really can't do that. That's, I mean, you've got to have you've got to sort of pick yourself up. And it's just like acting. It's one of those things, I think, that you have to have a lot of resilience. And I don't think I really did. And, you know, but at this point in my life, it's still a love of mine, and I still keep, you know, having these characters coming to me kind of, and I had kind of said to myself, well, I'm not going to write again until, you know, unless I'm absolutely haunted by it. Well, I am.
So, oh, good.
Yeah, so that's, so I've been back to that. But it's another chance maybe to go back and, you know, give it a different purpose, just like we're going to talk about today, that the course is all about changing the purpose of our relationships and, you know, not to proving guilt, which by, you know, this idea of putting our self-worth, projecting our self-worth outside ourselves and then wanting to be punished in some way and then blaming others for the inevitable punishment that we receive, right?
Right.
Not realizing that that's really the way we set it up to try to deny the guilt in our mind. You know, we can give it a different purpose. And that, you know, this lesson, you were asking why this lesson, and, you know, I don't know. It's another one of those very clear forgiveness lessons once you do understand the basics of the course, because and it's a lesson where Jesus really is very authoritative with us, and just kind of, you know, he kind of says, okay, quit with the baby business. Let's sit down. We've talked about this. You know, we're now, yes, you know, from our perspective, well, we're only in lesson 186, and, you know, but I mean, for myself, I've been through the workbook quite a few times, and even the first time we have some grasp. We're beginning to grasp what he's saying, although the metaphysics were very resistant to understanding the two levels on which the course speaks, and we take everything very literally when he's talking about the world, and that's not what he means. But he does in this lesson, you know, he really sits us down, I think, and as his students, and says, okay, you know, why did you come to this course? What is your, you know, what is your purpose? You know, what are you trying to, what's your goal here? And, you know, we have, and we realize, well, you know, we don't know what our goal is. We've forgotten again. And we think that our goal is somehow to reconcile A Course in Miracles with all of the other goals that we have in our life. And it's not.
Right.
The course is really written at the level of changing our mind about the idea of a world apart from God. And, you know, that's still very frightening to us. And so we have to go gently and slowly, but our role is very, very simple. And another thing that along the way, it's funny how, you know, I had to pick a theme actually for, I do the Sunday gathering at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center every, you know, four to six times a year, we rotate, teachers rotate in that. And that's here in Denver. And that's just a Sunday, you know, hour long talk about the course. And I had to pick a theme for that in advance. And so I just kind of randomly picked this one, but, you know, things are not as random as they seem.
Right.
And so what was interesting later was that, meanwhile, I had started interviewing Rosemary Lasasso at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, who was the woman who, she's an incredible teacher and friend, and she edited all of Ken's work, you know, and studied with Ken at Roscoe and has been with the foundation since she's, you know, the staff member that goes back the farthest to the very inception of the foundation with Ken and Gloria. And so she really has she's, before that, she was a philosophy professor at Fordham University for many years. And so she's really a brilliant woman. And this has been a classroom for her, the foundation itself and the course, you know, for, you know, 40 years or something. And so, I was interviewing her because she's still teaching at the foundation along with Jeff, who I'll also be interviewing and I do periodically, about their, you know, their practice and their forgiveness process. And it's, you know, which is just absolutely helpful and fascinating to me and for all of us, I think. But in particular, at the end of that interview, I asked her about, Ken used to refer to the foundation in many of his CDs and workshops. He talks about how the foundation for A Course in Miracles was, you know, he looked at it as an orchestra, and that he asked people that the idea being that no instrument in an orchestra dominates, no instrument in an orchestra is more important than another, and the soloists you know, have, there are soloists, there's a conductor, and yet they all blend together to create this beautiful whole. And that that was the mission of the foundation, to, you know, the metaphor by which the foundation was asked and the people that worked there were asked to learn to live. And so I was asking Rosemary about that, and she talked at length about it and beautifully about it and about how challenging that was and how that really brings up, you know, it's very, very hard for, it was hard for people there to accept that someone who's teaching the course is just as important as someone who's changing the beds in the residences, you know? Mm-hmm. And so all of that hierarchy kind of came out to be looked at and to be, you know, they used it as a classroom, and Ken kept working with them to do that. And she said something in there that I've heard before, but it struck me in a different way, and I think is very relevant to this lesson. And that is in the text in chapter 2. It says, the sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. And Ken, to his own staff, repeated that over and over. That is the only reason that you're here, which is another way of stating forgiveness. To accept the atonement for myself is to learn that the separation never happened. The atonement in the course is just that principle that this tiny mad idea that we could be other than perfect oneness and, you know, other than an all-loving source united with our creator, that that is possible. That was a tiny mad idea that was not possible, but we took it seriously. And so, you know, our job as course students is really to, when she said that, it just, you know how sometimes it just kind of, it reinvigorates you somehow. I saw that what he was talking about in a different way. And I really saw how that's, you know, accepting the atonement for myself is my only role within my marriage, is my only role within teaching A Course in Miracles, is my only role within, you know, my fiction writing and my other kinds of writing that I do, you know, for money and, you know, my role within my neighborhood and my country and, you know, with, and within the political party that I'm affiliated with and within the rest of it, you know, and to look at everyone that I think is not agreeing with me. And so I think this lesson speaks to that same theme and really, really eloquently. And Jesus just says, you have one function here, and that function is forgiveness. And don't tell me that it's too hard to learn. You taught yourself the impossible, and certainly you can learn this.
Right. I love it. And, yeah. You know, I do want to share something with you because just because I think it's pertinent here and it's kind of interesting is, and when I opened up this lesson, when you suggested it, I was thinking a little bit about it. And I think I had told you before that, a month or two ago, I started doing an evening meditation. And in fact, I keep thinking, you know, maybe I'll talk about that on radio just because I think it's a kind of thing that, you know, anybody could join me with that meditation. It's not a matter of, I mean, you know, not join me literally, but join me metaphysically, spiritually. But anyway, Mountain Time, I do a meditation every night at 9:30. And one of the motivations for doing this was because there is somebody in my life who is quite ill. And I had decided, along with a friend, that every night we would spend at least a few minutes in meditation, kind of just, you know, surrounding this person with whatever healing energy it is. But because I come from A Course in Miracles, of course, it was always that twist. So for me, that meditation always involves just trying to join with Jesus or join mm-hmm. with my center. But what I'm noticing over time is the meditation keeps changing. And mm-hmm. what has to do with this particular lesson is one of the things that I do is I literally open it, you know, I know I told you this. I see this pavilion like place that I wouldn't, you know, to me, it's like a spiritual center. It's a place where people come, but you're not allowed to come in if you can't drop your defenses. So at the door, you have to drop the defenses. You have to drop everything. And so, but like I said, every night it seems to change a little bit. So as a few nights ago, as we all came into this space for this healing activity, what I noticed is there was this one golden throne. And so I specifically said, okay, well, the person who this meditation is for, he gets to sit on the golden throne. But almost immediately what I could tell is others were like, well, what about us? You know, when do we get our turn on the golden throne? And so it all of a sudden occurred to me that it's sort of like everybody got their own. So even in the meditation, it just morphed into everybody got their own seat. You know, nobody was special or different than somebody else. They all got their own seats. But then what I quickly realized is that from each person, it was always different. It was a different kind of seat. It was a different kind of chair. It was a different, you know, it might be a different fabric, a different color, a different size. But within this space, every single person got their own space to sit with Jesus, so to speak. And while we were in that space, that's it. Every single person had their own lifeline. Every single person was, I mean, we were all there for the same purpose, but every single person got their own seat. And then when I opened this lesson, you know, and it's talking about, you know, you think you came up with these great plans. You think you came up with this great image of yourself, but you only have one function.
Right.
And that is the other thing that keeps coming to me, you know, that almost feels like a contradiction, but I keep working through it, is I feel like I'm doing the meditation because, of course, I would like to see a healing in this situation and for anybody who comes into that space. But on the other hand, what keeps coming through my mind is it's only the mind that needs to be healed.
Right.
You know, it is only the mind that needs to be healed. And every person who comes into this space gets exactly what they need. And they will work through that forgiveness, or they will work through that lesson on their own with their own spiritual teacher. But somehow in this space, we're holding the space for each other. But I thought it was interesting because I thought, you know, all of a sudden we think we have all these individual, you know, missions, and we don't. We all have a similar role, even though for each of us, it may look different to us.
Right. Absolutely. It's the, you know, it's really the beginning of learning that it's not about the form, it's about the content, you know.
Right.
The form is different, but the content is always the same. And, you know, in a sense, that metaphor that you're using is with the chairs is really, you know, everybody has their own version.
Yeah.
As long as we believe we're here, it will speak to us. And the Course says that in different, in the form that it takes will be different because within our different seeming scripts and dreams at the moment, and because we have different relationships and different, you know, I mean, we made it up that way. We set it up as with all these differences. And yet the point of it is really to begin to see beyond the differences to the golden throne, which is, you know, symbolic of that, of Jesus, of that memory that within all of us of love that can't be extinguished, you know? And so, you know, we're learning that we're a mind, as you were also saying, and there's, you know, this is all happening within the mind, and we can't accept that all at once. And this lesson is all about accepting, you know, accepting right now in this moment. Forgiveness is all about a present practice with this. You know, we're not asked to accept all of this at once. That's way too frightening for us, but we can accept right now that we have a choice. We can accept right now that, you know, that we all share the same internal equipment. We all have the same decision-making mind and the same power to choose. And we're all, you know, frightened children when we've chosen the ego that we'll be defending ourselves with these toys, these weapons. You know, they're not toys within the dream, but Jesus refers to them from his perspective. They're toys because they're not real.
Right.
And so, you know, we have to, lay down our arms, that lesson in My Defenselessness, My Safety Lies talks about, you know, and many other places in the Course, and drop our swords, you know, that we hold against our own neck, right? Really,
right.
Because we're not, that's the one that we're always, you know, attacking and bludgeoning. So, you know, I was going to just read, the second sentence of that section that I read from the text in chapter 2. About the, you know, this, it starts out, the sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. The second part, sentence of that says, this means you recognize that mind is the only creative level, which is really everything happens in the mind. And then it goes on, and that its errors, the mind's errors, are healed by the atonement, by the acceptance of the atonement for myself. And that's both, you know, referred to in the Course as the end game, if you will, you know, when we finally have all the guilt in our mind is undone through this process, we recognize that there is no world apart from God. Even though our bodies may appear to be here, we're no longer defensive about them, or because we're not identified with that as ourself anymore. But the atonement is also, the atonement principle is at work in any moment that we're willing to accept our function of forgiveness and change our mind, you know, and change our mind about the fact that it means something that everybody's chair is different, you know, and that one chair could be better than another, rather than just recognizing that, you know, within each mind, all of these chairs, you know, it depends which teacher you're choosing. They're instruments of specialness, as the Course would say, or they, you know, if we choose Jesus as our teacher and are really identifying with that golden throne, then all of them are become golden thrones. You know, it doesn't matter. The differences have no importance whatsoever. And that really is the same thing that Ken was teaching, I think, in that orchestra metaphor. And, you know, that the differences are nothing. We're all what we share, what we have in common, you know, and the only thing within the human condition that's real that we have in common is our need to remember we're not here and go home and go home to a love that can never be compromised, that can never be, you know, that lasts forever and that we can never lose, and we don't have to earn and we don't have to sacrifice to get. And will never, right. you know, betray us. And unlike the love, you know, the false idea of love that we've created in the world with which we struggle. So, you know, that's how we spend our days struggling to try to make that work and seeking for ourselves where we can't be found. And no wonder it's so enervating, you know, no wonder we're exhausted and depleted and angry and frustrated and, you know, and we turn on the TV and there's another reason we're frustrated. And, you know, it just, there's nothing. I mean, this Course is not about making us feel better. It's about us beginning to see that there's one thing that will make us feel better. And that's accepting the atonement for ourselves, seeing our sameness, that our plan for salvation will never work. You know, it hasn't worked and it's not going to work, you know. And we do, we have to, but that's like a resigning as our own teacher, as the Course says, in the moment. And what we, you know, what's important to emphasize, I think, is that we don't, that's not it. You know, we don't have to spend all of our time frustrated and struggling with our resistance. We, you know, in any moment, we can experience moments of real, real peace. In that interview I was talking about with Rosemary, that'll be posted in the next couple of weeks on my site, which is foraysinforgiveness.com. She talks about how she asked me, you know, I think I was complaining about something like this, about why don't we just feel better, you know? And she said, well, you know, have you ever had a holy instant? And I said, well, I you know, what I think of as the holy instant is when I change my mind about someone. And she said, well, how does that feel? And I said, well, you know, it feels really good. It feels like a big relief. It feels complete and there's no need in it. There's no judgment in it. There's a sense that everybody is, you know, whoever I was struggling with, I thought was the problem. There's a sense that we're on the same team. And she said, well, there you go.
You right.
That's the holy instant. It's not some, you know, there are no harps involved. it's this momentary, but, and that is no small feat, you know, that we never hear in time and space in the dream, you know, have a moment in which there isn't some conflict. In which we feel that all of our needs are met, in which we've dropped all judgment. I mean, this holy instant is outside of time and we get to taste that along the way with this. And that is tremendously empowering because once we've done that, we definitely want more of it. And we can contrast it with the alternative And the alternative is very, very painful, you know, and it doesn't mean we won't have ego attacks and we won't go back because we do have this hidden fear that we're working with. But, you know, we're so heavily supported. And Jesus said, you know, you will experience more and more of those if what? You just accept your function, like this lesson is going to talk about, right?
Right.
And the function is forgiveness. Everybody's special function is the same. It's to learn forgiveness. And forgiveness in the Course is simply in the moment when I'm upset about anything, when I'm anxious, depressed, when I'm feeling attacked, when I'm tired, when I'm sick, you know, it doesn't matter, bodily, emotional, whatever the trouble seems to be, it is the willingness to just stop and say, you know, I'm wrong about the cause of this. And to be very, I think, loving and attentive with ourselves, because it's coming from tremendous fear. But we have another teacher. We have a teacher. We could see peace. You know, Jesus is still right there with us. That golden throne is still available to us. And ultimately, we end up in the golden throne because, you know, we are a part of this. We grow up to take our place in the throne, you know.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, another thing I was just thinking is, you know, that way, what I love about there are so many things I really like about the Course, but these 365 lessons that are provided, what's great about doing those consistently, even if you don't take one lesson every day, maybe you take one lesson and you work on it for a week, but if you do that sequentially, you know, it builds that habit of what the Course says, rising above the battleground. Because, right. Like, when you're talking about those moments, you know, those moments of not feeling it, you know, just that whole idea of rising above the battleground. I mean, don't you sometimes think, you know, I've not played a lot of team sports, but, you know, there's a moment when you're on, and then there's a moment when you get to relax. Maybe you're on the bench, or you somehow get to watch it without just being totally on. And when I think about that rising above the battleground, that's how it feels to me, like, oh, you know, here's a minute of rest. Here's a moment that I can just see it from the outside. Mm-hmm. And one of the way, I mean, we talk a lot about that, but we actually have to do something, I think, to give ourselves the opportunity for that to happen. And doing these workbook lessons, you know, routinely gives us that opportunity that, once again, it just becomes the habit. You know, mm-hmm. I can step outside of this. You know, even if it's for 2 minutes, I can step outside of this and see it differently.
Right, exactly.
So I would really encourage people, if you're interested in this, you know, it doesn't come naturally in a sense.
No, it's I mean, we have to really, you know, we've trained ourselves to believe a thought system that's very cruel and it's not true, but we believe it and accept it without questioning it. And so we have to, you know, develop a regular habit of questioning, and the workbook introduces us to that habit, and
yes.
And then we take it, you know, and it tells us at the end that this is a beginning, not an end, and this is what we're asked to take to our lives, is this habit of questioning and turning to a new teacher, and throughout our day, you know, I mean, this is the vigilance that Jesus is asking for, but the only way that we are introduced to that is by, you know, going through the workbook lessons. You can't, mm-hmm. you know, people don't know what the heck we're talking about if they haven't done that, I think. And, mm-hmm. but it's very accessible, and it isn't a lot of work. They're very, you know, they're things that take a few minutes out of our day, the workbook lessons. And once we develop a practice with this, that's not very time consuming either, although we complain that it is. But, you know, it's because it's very much in the moment. We can always pause in the middle of our busy doings. And, you know, in the middle of some kind of anxiety attack or, you know, extended tantrum that we're having about feeling so unfairly treated by something someone did, we can still internally at the level of the mind pause and say, wait a minute, maybe I'm wrong about this, you know, maybe this mm-hmm. isn't because of him or her or it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is possible. And just do it, just even introducing that idea is a huge step. And the practice, you know, is not just the holy instance. It has residual effects in terms of beginning. It just starts to filter in, you know, we're training ourselves to identify much more with the right mind, with that prince, you know, that all loving self that sees everyone as the same and sees everything as a call for love that isn't loving. And my call for love, you know, knows that it's within me. You know, we're training ourselves to identify much more with that. So right-minded responses just will seem to effortlessly, you know, kind of flow through us. We won't be as reactive over time as we have been. We'll have times where we see, you know, we see that child in someone else and we say, oh, you know, I know that. I know how that feels. And, you know, we just, whatever reaction we have or whatever we're, you know, needs to happen in form can happen. And even if it's a tough conversation we have, it won't be punitive. It won't be, you know, as if the other person is a bad person, as someone that I need to forgive because of what they did. It will be someone, you know, it will be my brother on the way home, just like I am.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I wanted to, could we read a couple paragraphs?
Because, absolutely. You know we can.
Yeah, I wanted to, because so much of this is really him talking about, you know, our tendency for us to be so, you know, to complain about how hard the course is and it's not working. And, you know, and then that happens. That's our resistance that comes up. And as we go along on this path, you know, the ego becomes very, very threatened by what we're doing, because the only thing that keeps the ego going is my choice for it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm choosing again all the time and not identifying with guilt and fear and you know, the original sin of separation, which is unconsciously, we're not conscious of that, but that's what's keeping this whole thing going, you know, it's very threatened by that. So we will have times, and Jesus tells us we're going to have times where, you know, the ego seems to be screaming, and I know for me this is very true, you know, you're not getting anywhere with this course. Look, you're just in a complete tantrum again. Your life isn't any better. In fact, in form, your life is going to hell. And,
yeah.
You know, if you hadn't done this course, you probably would have been able to devote more time to, like, keeping your life together. You know, I mean, all that kind of nonsense that the ego brings our way, you know, and denying any kind of, you know, holy and any kind of progress that we've made, right? I mean, not that we ever try to judge our progress, because that's never a good idea, but we have made some progress over time. Again, the progress is that we're becoming more tolerant. We're spending more time right-minded and less time with the ego. But that doesn't mean that when we're with the ego, it's still not tremendously, you know, painful and nasty. It may seem more so because, you know, we hear it more. We're not as afraid of it. So in some ways we can hear its nastiness more, you know, but Jesus in this lesson is saying, you know, you can do this. It's false humility to say that this is too divine for you, you know, that you, there's
right.
No way that you're not eligible for the atonement, that you're not somehow, you know, look at, because we try to show Jesus too, you know. I mean, I kind of go to Jesus saying, you know, this, well, I mean, I think I am the ego when I've chosen the ego. So I'm complaining to him, look at how crappy my life is, and it's all your fault, you know, because
uh-huh.
Now I've been choosing you and look what's happened. So in response to all of that, he says, let us not fight our function. And I'm in paragraph 2 of this lesson.
Okay.
It is not our idea. You know, I mean, it's because it's based on, you know, the only ideas that we have are all based, all projections of that tiny mad idea of separation. So he says the means for our function are given us by which it will be perfectly accomplished. And the means are forgiveness. All that we are asked to do is to accept our part in genuine humility and not deny with self-deceiving arrogance that we are worthy. What is given us to do, we have the strength to do. Our minds are suited perfectly to take the part assigned to us by one who knows us well, and that's Jesus, our teacher. He knows his students. And, you know, as a mind, our bodies, my brain, Susan doesn't have the strength to do this, but I'm not Susan.
Right.
And, you know, so there is a part of me that is very well suited to doing this and can, and has, you know, is brilliant. And the decision-making mind is brilliant to have made up the impossible and believed that. So certainly we can take these simple steps is what he was talking to Helen and Bill originally with this. Helen, the scribe of the course, and her collaborator, Bill Thetford at Columbia. But they are all of us. They are representative of all students of this course. And he says in paragraph 4, all false humility we lay aside today that we may listen to God's voice reveal to us what he would have us do. We do not doubt our adequacy for the function he will offer us. And God, of course, in the course, it's not about God giving us special directives in the world. God doesn't know anything about this. That's an example of the course meeting us in the condition we think we're in. But, Jesus is saying, accept your function, the function that I gave you that will return you to your awareness of God's, that you are within God, that you never left this presence. You know, this practice that I'm teaching you will work. It's going to take time because you're very resistant and you've taught yourself very well what isn't true. So we need to, we need to undo those barriers to love's awareness and by accepting your function and practicing this throughout your day, that will happen. You know, that's all you have to do. Your role is really, really small and really simple. And it works.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing this lesson uses the word arrogance over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's really interesting because, of course, it really puts it as, in fact, one line says, it is pride that would deny the call for God himself.
Right.
You know, that whole thing of I'm not worthy and or that, I'm above this, I'm below this, I'm beside this, whatever it is, that's all arrogance.
Right. And it's the ego's arrogance of believing that we could make a will apart from God, mm-hmm. And now we are apart from God. Now we're these lowly human creatures, and we've made up an idea of a punishing God. We've made up a God in the ego's image that's just a more powerful ego than we are.
Right.
And we're terrified of that God, And that's not God. Like, what kind of father is that? That's a giant ego.
Mm-hmm.
God is all loving. God knows that not one note in heaven's song was missed. God knows this, God doesn't even know that we're dreaming because he only knows the truth. The correction is the miracle is a correction, and Jesus is the ambassador of the miracle. He says, come on, I know you're dreaming. God doesn't, but I also know it's a dream. Let me teach
right.
you. Let me teach you, and you can wake up. And we'll do it gently. We'll do it moment by moment. We're not going to hurl you into heaven, which to you right now is terrifying. But you can accept, don't tell me that you can't accept your function. And he says in the next paragraph, in paragraph 5, there is one way and only one to be released from the imprisonment your plan to prove the false is true has brought you. Accept the plan you did not make instead.
Yes.
And, and that just means, there's only one answer to every problem from the course's perspective. It's tremendously simple in that regard. The answer is always forgiveness. And it's always for me to change my mind about the cause of my upset. Always. There's nothing else going on out there.
Yeah, and in that same paragraph, one thing I like is when it says, the arrogant must cling to words, afraid to go beyond them to experience,
right,
which might affront their stance. And I thought, ooh, that kind of hit me.
Uh-huh.
That hit me where it hurts, because
yeah.
I would love to keep it all in the brain and not experiential. And,
And we all would. I think that's where we start is we start, with an intellectual sort of, we kind of back into this course,
Uh-huh.
And I think, really, we're very wary of it. We're very attracted to the beautiful statements about what we can't understand, but we're also really scared of it. And we're very scared of doing what it's asking us to do because it seems like, Jesus tells us that he's asking us to question every value that we hold, because every value that we hold is valueless. We've taught ourselves that our salvation is all these special relationships in the world, all these things that can save us, all these things that these substitutes for God that we think can fill us up. And, you know, and all these bargains that we make to get our needs, we think can get our needs met. And you know, if we just sacrifice enough and then all of this, you know, need to project our feelings of, you know, this nagging sense of guilt that never goes away on others to prove that we exist, but it's not our fault, to this punishing God we made up. You know, he's saying, wait a minute, you know, that is not you know, that's very, very scary to you. So we'll go gently. You know, all you have to do is in the moment, very gently begin to practice this. See, you know, try it. Try, you know, we start by trying it. That's what the workbook's all about. Mm-hmm. And it directs us very specifically through the 365-day, especially the first part is all about undoing. And it gives us lessons for each day that are directed in some way at questioning. And we don't have to understand the lesson. We just have to try to do it to the best of our abilities and watch the way we mess up, because that's okay. I mean, we, you know, Ken always used to say it's not about doing the workbook perfectly. It's about learning that there's a part of me that doesn't want to do the workbook, because yeah. that's learning. That begins to chip away at this defensiveness that we have and this need to prove that we're right. And this need to, you know, it helps us begin to build trust in our teacher, and having enough trust to begin to say to him, you know what, a part of me really hates you.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually a huge step, you know. Jesus, get out of here, you know. I want to watch TV right now. I don't want to, you know, and I want to, like, project like hell.
Right, right.
You know, because he doesn't judge us in any of this. But he is authoritative, as I was saying at the beginning, and he is saying, you know, if you do want to feel better, I've got a way that works and brings you to real peace that's not of this world, because everything in this world is unstable and everything in this world you made up will fail you, because that's the way you made it up, only you forgot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Faulty foundations
yeah.
from the very beginning.
Exactly.
Well, and I was just kind of smiling to myself because and actually, I'm going to blame it on astrology. I've got something going on in my astrological chart that I feel like it's just bringing lots of lessons to me at this point. But one of the things that, you know, and it just seems like it's almost a daily thing. But what I'm noticing is that, you know, things will happen and I'll say, okay, now I know that people are either offering love or asking for love. And so this is a situation where somebody's asking me for love. And I'll just go, but they're going to have to go find it someplace else.
Right.
I am not open for business. But you know what? See, that to me, that at least is a beginning. You know, mm-hmm. I'm recognizing what's going on, but I'm also recognizing my own resistance going, no, you know, I'm not going to make you feel better.
Right.
You know, I don't feel like making you feel better today.
Well, and you're introducing the idea that maybe I'm wrong. At least,
yes.
At least introducing, you know, this is, I, because if this is true and the Course is saying that everything is either a call for love or love, and let's face it, most of the time it's a call for love. It seems like a
right.
call, you know, it presents as it seems like a call for love.
Right.
You know, at least introducing that is introducing doubt. And, you mm-hmm. know, Jesus just needs that toe in the door because, you know, again, truth can't be extinguished. And the light is there. And, you know, we eventually back into it, you
mm-hmm.
know, and very, very, very slowly over time, we turn around a little bit more toward it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we turn away again. But each time we've turned a little further into the light. And I think a big step comes too when we're willing or we have the awareness, and it's a good reminder that will help us get to that awareness. When we find ourselves working with that idea that it's a call for love or love, that there's only always my, it's only always my call for love. There's
right.
no one else calling.
Yeah.
And so that brings in the awareness that, you know, it's really myself that I'm being very brutal with here. And, you know, again, that image of the sword lifted at our own neck, you know, that's, we've taken ourselves hostage in this ego thought system. We're imprisoning ourselves. And, you know, if you can work with that image and sort of have a tenderness toward your, a self that would be that terrified, you know, the child within a self that would be that terrified. You know, if you just kind of stay with how awful it feels, just a little longer than you'd like to, you know, you're showing that it's, it, you know, you've developed a compassion, the compassion that Jesus has for us. It just sort of returns, you know, it passes and you see that it doesn't really have the power that you thought it did, and that you can, you know, you can drop the sword.
Right. Well, because for me, it's a big step to just not see it as an attack.
Absolutely.
And go for it. You know, go for the jugular.
Right.
Which is my first instance.
Yep.
You know, or my first instinct rather.
Right.
But so are you saying you don't think this is Uranus on my Mars?
Well, can I don't know. Mercury retrograde really had me flustered for, I felt like it had lasted for months and months. And I was really wanting to think that was the cause, but it's not that those things within the dream, you know, don't have, we made up a dream, and so it probably does, you know, there are the laws of the world, but, and just as much power as anything else that we give it. But, you know, it is good to remember that you know, yeah, nothing, that can't be the real cause.
It can just be that
we're always looking for something to blame it on, and we have no end of, you know, we have an endless variety of rationalizations for what we're feeling.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and bringing it back to the lesson, there's one line in here that I like, and it says, and it's towards the end, actually, maybe I can't remember what paragraph. It says, in lovely contrast, certain as the sun's return each morning to dispel the night, your truly given function stands out clear and wholly unambiguous. There is no doubt of its validity.
Yeah.
And I like that. So, you know, we can put up all the smoke screens and we can talk about Uranus on Mars and we can talk about Mercury retrograde and everything else, but it's sort of like, you know, very truly our real function, forgiveness, is never going to go away. And it's just going to stand there clearly whenever we're ready to turn in that direction.
And it's really our teacher that's just always has that hand extended. And the next, you know, it goes on from there to say it comes from one who knows no error, that beautiful, you know, truly given function comes from one who knows no error, and his voice is certain of its messages. They will not change nor be in conflict. All of them point to one goal and one you can attain. Your plan may be impossible, but God's can never fail because he is its source.
Right.
You know, and Jesus tells us, you know, I am so close to you, we cannot fail. And so it's a lovely to think that even when I'm having, you know, unwilling, in the example like that you use that we can all relate to, we have so many times when we're just unwilling to do this. And boy, this last week I had a lot of them, you know, you just, you know, even in those times where you're just having a meltdown of some kind, that beautiful, that light is still there and that hand is still extended and there's still, you know, as Ken said, this little man, smiling man on your shoulder that's just tapping you saying, you know, I'm right here. It's all silly. It's okay. You know, we can laugh about this as soon as you're ready.
Right.
So, because nobody, you know, despite all those toys and weapons, you know, no bodies are really, are really taken in this process, you know. Feels like it. Feels life-threatening.
Yeah. Well, and even in this lesson, you know, once again, it talks about two voices. And it says, you know, you don't have to listen to the voice that makes you feel confused, bewildered, and the voice that's inconsistent and that makes you feel unsure of everything.
Right.
You can turn away. You can hear instead a certain voice which tells you of a function given you by your creator who remembers you and urges that you now remember him. So, you know, it's, you always have the choice. So do you like looking at the mud? Do you like looking at the confusion and feeling bewildered? You know, and sometimes I do. Yeah. You know, I'm going to be self-righteous and be there. But you're right. There's always that little voice going, okay, whenever you're ready.
Right, exactly. And you know, I mean, we can begin to, you know, the ego never shuts up. So you know, it isn't that we deny that the ego is, you know, mouthing off and has all of these problems and that there's a part of us that's very attracted to that. But, you know, that's not all we are. There's another part of us waiting, and it's only my fear that attracts me to what the ego's saying. And, you know, again, that's if we can bring it back to, this is just my fear coming up again. There it is again. You know, mm-hmm. There it is. It's not a surprise at this point. I've been practicing this course for some time, and you know, you kind of get used to it a little bit more and just say, you know, that's my call for love to be tender with mm-hmm. myself, because, you know, if I'm fighting with reality and I'm, you know, thinking that the problem is in this person and feeling so justified about it, boy, that little kid must be very, very scared, you know? Mm-hmm. And so again, I think the more we can, it's really that learning not to judge ourselves in some way that is a way to look at it that's been meaningful in my process, just because, you know, kind of it just kind of disables the harshness with which I treat myself, because, boy, we can really, you know, get the ego gets very, very harsh with us, but we're not the ego.
Right.
You know?
Well, and Susan, we've got 3 minutes to finish up the show today.
Chatted away here.
Yes, we did. So do you have any announcements that you'd like to make? And by the way, I went ahead and I posted Forays in Forgiveness, which is her blog, and that's .com. I went ahead and put that in the chat room if anybody wants to go and check that out later. But you can always just find it at www.forays, F-O-R-A-Y-S. In Forgiveness, and that's all one word, forays in forgiveness.com. So do you have any announcements?
You know, just I had mentioned earlier that I'm interviewing this two teachers at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles again, and those interviews will very soon. The one I just did with Rosemary is quite long, so I think I'm going to send it out in two parts, but they will be posted on my site, and for people that are course students and trying to practice this in their lives, I think that they will be very helpful. And then I will be interviewing Jeff after that, and that will also be posted. So, and if you're here, if you're at the, here in Denver and are a course student and want to, or, you know, just embracing the course, you know, somebody new, it's fine. I will be leading the Sunday gathering at 11 a.m. at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center here in Denver. And, you know, you're welcome to come down for that too.
Okay, good. And also I'd like to mention, because I just got a notice of it, is at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which you can find at now I'm just kind of spacing it. But anyway, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is facim.org. They're going to do a one-day streaming class that I thought the title looked particularly interesting. Oh. And now I can't remember what it is, but I would encourage people to go over there. In fact, it might have been something about healing or something about
body,
moving.
I know what it is. It's the body of a chronic illness revisited, because they did a 2 or 3 day workshop on this last year. And it got so much people, you know, it was fabulous as always, but there was so much interest and they hadn't really, you know, finished addressing it. And so they're continuing with that. And it's a great topic. But I love that it's very funny, the body, a chronic illness. Well, you know, right. From the course's perspective, nothing gets solved in this body.
Right. So everybody, I'll post that in the chat room too, but there again, it's facim.org. And if you go there, you'll see all the classes that they offer, and they do stream classes very inexpensively, and it's wonderful to be able to see them. And the truth is, even if you're not available on that day, once you register for that class, you have up to about 2 weeks to watch all of the presentations. So it's a really cool thing to do. So I would encourage you to do that. I would also encourage encourage everybody to stay tuned to 1-2 Radio today because Kathleen Peterson and Tamara Childs are introducing their new show, which is called Elements of Wisdom. That's going to be at 10 a.m. Pacific today. And, of course, we have 1-2 Originals, which is always kind of an interesting show. Different hosts rotate through that. That's at 11 a.m. Pacific. And, of course, right after me is Christine DeMaurier. So, Susan Dugan, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun.
It is, and I just so appreciate your perspective. I appreciate all of your ideas, so thank you for being here. I look forward to another conversation, and thanks to Scott Weaver, too. So, everybody, thank you for being here today. Thanks for all your comments in the chat room. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.